corporations seem to be getting the economics of it, because for a long time it was like, well, why would we waste money, you know, on treating malaria or finding a cure for dengue or something, some third world, because, I mean, they can only afford 10 cents a day. But it seems like they finally multiplied 10 cents times 4 billion people and liked the number that came out. You got to wonder why it took them so long to do that math. It must drive you guys crazy.
You know, we're told in the Bible, in Ecclesiastes, there's a time for everything. And the pharmaceutical industry took its time. In some senses, on the way, it was trying to block helping people in the developing world. We describe in the book the events around the big pharmaceuticals fighting with the South African government over patents for HIV drugs. But they've gotten over that, I think. Many of them now are led by very enlightened people. And they want to do well by doing good, in a serious way, I think. So it is changing. Their bottom line always is profit. And you cannot argue with them, and that's what they exist for. But more and more of them are beginning to make drugs for the developing world, to enter into partnerships, into public-private partnerships, or, like GSK, to contribute their intellectual property and saying, here's a pool, everybody else come and join us, other companies, put it in the pool, and let it be available to any drug developer. We don't have the time, we have to focus on our two or three blockbusters, but somebody else might. So here's our knowledge, please use it. These are all good signs.
And a good concrete example of that is actually in malaria. Abdullah described the tragedy of his sister's death. Today, there is no malaria vaccine, and everybody knows that vaccines are, you know, the mainstay of public health prevention. But by 2016, it's expected there will be a malaria vaccine on the market, and that vaccine is a partnership between a large pharmaceutical company, GSK, and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. So these things are yielding tangible results. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's not going to be the large U.S.-based multinational companies that are going to make the biggest difference in global health, in our view. It's going to be the companies today in India, in China, and tomorrow in Africa. So we've told a number of stories, and we tell a number of stories in the book about Indian companies. Let me tell you a story about a Chinese company. So in the fall of 2009, just when H1N1 was ravaging Canada, and everybody remembers that time, before we had a vaccine on the market and everyone was screaming about what was taking the vaccine so long, even before the Americans had the injectable vaccine on the market, they did have the nasal vaccine. I bumped into Dr. Wang Yu, who's the head of the Center for Disease Control in China, and a biotechnologist. And I asked him, what's happening with H1N1 in China? He said, oh yeah, you know, we got the seed stock for the vaccine. He got the virus from the World Health Organization 4 months ago. They've grown the virus, they've produced the vaccine, it's passed through the regulators, it's on the market, and we vaccinated, I think he told me, 10 million, 20 million, 100 million people, and a lot of people. And this was before there were any vaccinations in Canada or the United States. And so that's a very interesting story about the role of a Chinese company. It was actually Sinovac, a Chinese company that manufactured that vaccine. It's a very interesting story. Of course, it's another thing for them to get that vaccine into the arms of 1.2 billion people. So I'm not saying they're all the way there. But that's the sort of world we're living in. And that's the present, which most people don't realize. And we wrote this book to open people's eyes about the flat world in life sciences and how that's affecting the health of people. The future is similar stories in Africa.
We've been working with them to envisage and put in place things like the Mars Center that we have in Toronto here. Life sciences, convergence innovation centers, which would have the following components. There would be a fund that would attract scientists to think about how to translate the knowledge that they're creating into products. They would have a virtual component which would network the scientists in the country, but with a focus towards translational research and going down the path of product development. And thirdly, maybe a modest physical structure like the Mars Center that we have here, where they can bring together business, science, and finance under one roof, together with facilities to generate income like conferencing centers and so on, so that they become self-sustainable. But by networking people in a virtual way and also physically, these life science convergence centers, innovation centers, are likely to be the catalyst for that move from dependence to independence in terms of the creation and use of knowledge.
Fundamentally, our book is a book of hope. This is a book of hope because the world is becoming a better place, and science and innovation is a pathway, to be sure, not the only pathway, to a better world. Many people, when they think of global affairs, will think of politics and relationships amongst nations, and that too is a pathway, political diplomacy, to a future world. But so is science and innovation affecting the health and well-being of people in the developing world. And that is the story that is not often told. And that's the story we're trying to tell in the book.
The book is The Grandest Challenge, Taking Life-Saving Science from Lab to Village. I've been speaking with the authors Dr. Abdallah Dar and Dr. Peter Singer, and The Grandest Challenge, published by Doubleday Canada.